Welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly magazine of cultural and community affairs. This is your host and producer, Alan Farley. Later on, we'll be talking with Peter Robinson about films and other cultural events. And we'll chat with Bruce Jenkins about baseball for the first time this year. But before that, it's all about a new discovery of a Noel Coward play. Joining me now on Open Air, two guests to talk about a rare Noel Coward play being presented at the Thrill Peddlers Theater here in San Francisco. The director of the production of the Noel Coward's The Better Half, Eddie Muller. Welcome, Eddie.
Thank you for having me, Alan.
And Professor Richard Hand from Glamorgan University in Wales, who uncovered and has published this rare Noel Coward play. Welcome.
Welcome. Very pleased to be here.
Well, first, I guess I want to find out, Eddie, how did it come that this is going to be the American premiere of this Coward play?
Well, oddly enough, it's all because of Grand Guignol Theater, which the Thrill Peddlers specialize in, reviving the tradition of the Grand Guignol. And so the oddity of realizing that Coward had written a play for the Grand Guignol Theater's London incarnation is sort of what made this transatlantic connection happen, which is largely due to Richard's involvement, because he's also a specialist in Grand Guignol theater. And really, I mean, he can explain this story better than I, but that's really what led him to discover the play in the first place.
But how did you find out about it? How did the Thrill Peddlers find out about the play?
Because of the connection with Richard. There is already an established connection between Richard and this company.
I see.
And so all I know is that at a certain point, Russell Blackwood, the artistic director of the Thrill Peddlers, asked me if I would direct this play, which I was very honored and flattered to be asked. I'm still kind of wondering why. I mean, what's the connection between what I sort of specialize in and Noel Coward? And I suppose it's because of all the people involved in Thrill Peddlers, maybe I'm the one with the good manners.
Well, I would never think of Noel Coward and Grand Guignol in the same
That's what's so surprising. But then that's, and you know, I'm going to really let Richard speak to this.
Sure.
But that's probably because a lot of people have somewhat of a misinterpretation of what Grand Guignol actually is. And so that's why they say, how could Coward ever fit into that scheme of things? But in fact, he fits quite nicely. And this play in particular, and it's funny because Richard and I, who, by the way, just met for the first time about 15 minutes ago, were discussing this on the way over here about what an audience's expectation was of a night at the Grand Guignol, and why a play like this works quite well.
Well, yeah, give us the definition.
Well, actually, if you don't mind, I would love to hear
Richard.
Okay.
Well, the Grand Guignol comes from the name of a theatre that opened in Paris in 1897, and it experimented with one-act plays, a kind of naturalism, first of all. It was one of those kind of great naturalist studios in Paris. But then they discovered that they did a couple of fairly morbid plays, kind of loosely based on kind of Jack the Ripper kind of themes. And these were huge successes.
Uh-huh.
And then they were pretty good at marketing, and they realized, we've got something here. And that, thus the formula was born. So what you always had at the Grand Guignol in Paris was a selection of one-act plays, and they'd intersperse slice of life, or as they preferred to call it, slice of death, of course, with comedies. So an audience would go along, they'd have a thrilling play, and then they'd have a comedy. And often a kind of sex farce or a comedy of manners, but very much in the Molière tradition. And then they'd go back to another horror play, a terror play. So for the audience, it was a real range of emotions and a range of experiences in one evening. So not only would they see three or four short plays, but it was a real roller coaster ride, going from a kind of something out-and-out horror or suspense through to something that's hilarious. So it's that mixture. But the thing is that with the name of the theatre, Grand Guignol has entered the language. And still, with any, you know, film reviews of Hostel or Saw or whatever, somebody's going to say, "Oh, this is real Grand Guignol."
Right.
So even though the theatre's long gone, itself, the name, the phrase is still with us. So I think it's associated now with heightened horror. But actually, the truth is a bit more complex than that, because mm-hmm. comedy was extremely important as well.
And how did you first make a connection with thrill peddlers?
Well, myself and my colleague Michael Wilson, my co-researcher, published a book in 2002 called Grand Guignol, The French Theatre of Horror. And then Russ Blackwood, who's the artistic director at Thrill Peddlers, got in touch with us because, you know, he runs his own Grand Guignol Theatre here. And we've been in regular contact ever since. So, you know, it's over 6 years now that we've been corresponding and being friends.
All right, now tell us how you uncovered the script for The Better Half. I mean, it certainly, the play was known. It just appeared in volumes about Coward's work. The theatrical companion, The Coward, that was published 50 years ago, had a précis of The Better Half, and when it was produced in 1922, but never been revived since.
That's right, yeah. Well, with our first book, looking at the Parisian Grand Guignol, we translated 10 plays out of hundreds, the repertoire. I mean, it ran for 65 years and had an enormous repertoire of one-act plays. And then as we were researching that, we found an interesting little kind of footnote to the story, which was for 2 years in London, 1920 through to 22, London had its own Grand Guignol Theatre. And we thought, now this is fascinating. And then when we looked into it more, one of the main actors was Louis Casson, his wife. His wife, Sybil Thorndike, her brother Russell Thorndike, realised, well, now these are major names. Now, this is before St. Joan and, you know, the George Bernard Shaw work with her. And we thought, now this is a really interesting story. Now, what we found was in stories to do with English theatre, they tended to say it was a flop. But we looked into it, we looked at reviews, actually seemed to be a bit more to the story than that, and it actually did seem to have a success, a cult success certainly, but also a popular success. And then we looked more and more into it, and we got the list of the plays that were performed. They performed over 40 in the repertoire. It's, you know, nothing compared to the hundreds that Paris did, of course. But some of the names associated with that, some of these writers like Richard Hughes, Noel Coward, you know, very young at the time, but this name cropped up as having produced a play there. And then we found other people who'd tried to submit plays. Joseph Conrad had written a play for the London Grand Guignol. Now, it got turned down, a great shame. But it was obviously drawing artistic talent. You know, these writers were fascinated with the potential of this experiment in a very French form, but this experiment that was taking place near the Savoy in London.
So how did you track down the script?
Well, we went to the Lord Chamberlain's archive in the British Library.
Which used to be the censor.
That's right, yeah. For over 200 years in Britain, there was a system of theatrical censorship starting in the mid-18th century, finally abolished in 1968. What that meant was any play that was going to be publicly performed had to be submitted to the Lord Chamberlain's office. They'd read it, they'd approve it, they could ban plays. And more, perhaps more common than that, they could insist on cuts. They could cut lines, words, whole scenes. So that was a mechanism that had to. Otherwise, if you didn't get a licence, you couldn't get it staged. And if you tried to stage it without a licence, you know, the theatre would be closed down and everything. Now, what they've got, now, this is quite a repressive system, but at the same time, there's an extraordinary catalogue of work, because they've all the plays that were submitted to the Lord Chamberlain's office are carefully filed. So we got access to the archive and began looking through. And those plays for the Grand Guignol, that period, 1920 to 22, this is a fascinating catalogue of work, because some plays were banned outright. Others were tinkered with the famous or notorious blue pencil of the censor. And that's where we found the Noel Coward play, The Better Half. There it was, typewritten, scribbles on it, including one bit of blue pencil, but perhaps we'll come to that later.
Well, right, because yes, I remember, in fact, that Coward had a little bit of a battle with the Lord Chamberlain's office about the Vortex, which appeared a couple of years later.
That's right.
Which was considered, you know, rather controversial at the time. But so you found it. What did you find? Tell us about the play.
Yeah, well, what we realised this was for the Grand Guignol, and your first thought, is this a horror play? I think not. And sure enough, it's a comedy of morality. And even though it's a very early work by Coward, and he does mention it in his own autobiography, and of course he's quite dismissive, saying, you know, next to the full-blooded horrors of the Grand Guignol, it wouldn't make much impact. But at the same time, it's a writer finding his style. It's enormous fun. And it is still very funny. I mean, I'm very excited about the performance we're going to see.
That's what really amazed me about it when I read it the first time, was how completely contemporary it felt to me. I mean, besides just the wit of the writing, my first instinct was this is so easily adaptable to any era. I mean, you don't have to set this in 1922. I was laughing with my friends that when I read it, I said, you know, we could set this in the Berkeley Hills, and this would work just fine. I don't know if we have quite the brilliance of the sparkling wit that is exhibited in this play, but certainly the motivations of the characters are timeless.
Well, I did read last year that there was to be a production in London last fall.
There was, yes. That took place in London, yeah. Again, as part of a Grand Guignol season. And I feel quite passionate about that, actually, because I think it wasn't just a play that Coward had happened to write. You know, he did write it specifically for the Grand Guignol. Now, of course, he's downplaying it with his sort of irony in his autobiography, but at the same time, it does belong very comfortably in that Grand Guignol repertoire. Because the other thing with the Grand Guignol is, as I was saying earlier, that, yes, you get the mixture of horror, which it's most synonymous with now. Comedy is very important, but often they share the same kind of themes. So, you know, jealousy, adultery, you know, these are great makings for horror plays, you know, revenge stories. They're also very, very good for comedies as well. It just perhaps takes a slightly different direction. The dialogue and performance style is perhaps handled slightly differently, but it's not completely chalk and cheese. You know, they're sometimes sharing the same kind of territory.
Yeah, and I agree completely. And directing this type of thing, that's what you have to really look for, is are we achieving that balance? Because if you're only getting one side of it, you're kind of missing it, and it's not really working. And so, like with this Coward piece, it's very important that you get the humor and the bite of the satire and everything. But there is kind of a bitter, nasty, if I may say, undercurrent to the whole thing that keeps the audience very much on edge, because they are aware of this is a Grand Guignol piece, and is something unexpected going to happen that we really are not accustomed to in this type of material. And that's really, really important, I think, in the whole Grand Guignol experience, because it's not, it is, I mean, our focus is this is a night at the theater, and you have to look at it as a total piece. So I don't want this play to just stand out as this is a whole separate thing that we just happen to be doing here as a special event. It is part of the whole thing, and I think that people coming to see it, you know, they would be very remiss if they thought they got the full show with this Coward one act. You have to see it in the context of a night of Grand Guignol.
Right, and there's another play on the bill as well.
Yes, it's called The Old Women or A Crime in the Madhouse, which is a staple, if you will, of the Grand Guignol Theater.
Yeah. That's right. It's one of the classics, actually, one of the most famous pieces. Mm-hmm. Originally written by André de Lorde, who is called the Prince of Terror in Paris, who wrote literally hundreds of plays. I mean, extraordinarily prolific writer. Now, quite fascinatingly with this piece, it was first performed in Paris in 1925, which means we discovered that London got the premiere. So it was performed in translation first in London, which shows a good relationship that de Lorde had with, you know, his cousins in London who are doing the Grand Guignol there. And so it was only performed in French, in the original French, in 1925.
So was it performed together with the Coward play in London?
No, it wasn't, actually, no. The reason that's been selected is it's one of the great masterpieces of the Grand Guignol. It's also, in terms of the London Grand Guignol, it has a very important place because it's particularly notorious. It has a... I won't... This is a spoiler, isn't it?
But careful of your spoilers. You're going to talk about the setting, probably. The location of the piece?
Yeah. Set in an asylum. And it builds up to some very violent moments in the piece. And the London Grand Guignol realised they'd have trouble with the Lord Chamberlain with this, so they were very devious. They actually sent it to the Lord Chamberlain saying that it was going to be performed somewhere else. So it didn't have Grand Guignol at the Little Theatre London across the top of it. So it was rubber stamped. It was approved without a single blue pencil mark. Now, maybe the censors read it very quickly. Maybe they didn't read it at all. So this was approved. And then when it was performed at the Little Theatre and the newspaper reviews loved it, or not everyone, some were very shocked by it, but it caused a furore of delight, not necessarily controversy. But the Lord Chamberlain was furious, and they wouldn't let it happen again. So in a way, it marks the beginning of the end.
Mm-hmm. And, of that troublesome little theatre.
That troublesome little theatre, yes.
Well, we're talking with Professor Richard Hand and with Director Eddie Muller about the Thrill Peddlers Theatre and their presentation of two one-acts in the Grand Guignol tradition, including Noel Coward's The Better Half, playing at the Hypnodrome through May 3rd, and that's located at 575 10th Street between Bryant and Division here in San Francisco. 1-800-838-3006 for ticket information. We'll repeat that at the end of the program. But can you give us an idea of the plot of the Coward one act without giving away anything?
But I also wanted to make this comment, that the other thing that's really interesting to me about the Grand Guignol Theater is that it's like genre fiction, which I'm very familiar with in this country, and film noir, which is a specialty of mine and all that. It's interesting that in many cases, those venues are the best for slipping in social commentary and things, which became an attraction of the Grand Guignol as well as the shock and sensation and horror stuff. They would take on, social issues, and it's very interesting because I think that's where Coward's piece really fits in well, is it is somewhat of a daring depiction of the British upper class and the sexuality, and I noticed that was in the Lord Chamberlain's comments, and I think it's to Coward's credit as a writer that they didn't change anything in the play, because it wasn't a simple case of, well, let's just lop this out. I mean, it's so well structured and well written that you can't really lose much of anything. And it's depiction of a woman who is married to a perfectly proper British gentleman, but realizes that she is totally dissatisfied, and she's dissatisfied in a sexual way. And it's spoken of quite pointedly in the play that she is not happy with the way things are working out in the bedroom, and she is very suspicious that her husband is perhaps finding his cerebral needs, if you will, being met by another woman. So it is sort of a classic triangle piece, but you're never quite sure of whether this affair is going on or not. And it's very interesting, and I think the characters have a lot of depth for a one-act play. It's quite intriguing, and there's a lot there to mine, and I think Coward himself mined it in later works. I mean, you can really see some of the later plays, particularly Private Lives. It seems there's just stuff that maybe that's one of the reasons the play stayed unknown, because as a writer, I think he would just prefer... Yeah, it's not essential to see this one performed.
Right. Yeah.
I've used bits and pieces of it subsequently.
I think you're right, Eddie, what you were saying about the the sense, credit to the censors there, because I think they recognised how well-crafted it is. I think they just recognised good writing.
Mm-hmm. And he was 21 at the time.
Yeah. It's extraordinary, isn't it? It's wonderful. There, some comedies were banned outright for the Grand Guignol, which handle the same kind of thing, handle adultery and... But the censors just didn't like the way it was handled. Felt it was rather crass, or mm-hmm. or just too excessive, and decided it was offensive. Our values have changed now, probably, and some of these plays seem really, really harmless to us. But there's this recognition of how well written is the comedy of the Coward mm-hmm. play.
And he's so smart, because he sometimes inserts his most scathing bit of business as a throwaway, but it's so well done that they would never think of cutting that out, because in some respects it's such brilliant innuendo that to cut it out means that you're seeing something that, you know, do I want to reveal that I know what this means exactly? Let's just leave it. That was very common in American films, which had, of course, the same thing. You know, the production code in Hollywood was exactly the same as the Lord Chamberlain. And there were many, many things that got through in Hollywood movies in the 30s and 40s where the censor would just say, I'm going to let this go because if I make an issue of it, it indicates that I actually understand what they're trying to say, and I don't know if I want to do that.
Yeah.
Well, Richard, tell me how you got interested in this area of theater, of Grand Guignol in the first place.
Well, I was always interested in horror culture as a kid. I had three older brothers, and so I was raised on horror comics and horror movies and those kind of things.
This, I realize, is what we have in common.
We have this in common, yeah. and then, as a student, I got into theatre and drama and, you know, the kind of classics and Shakespeare and all that kind of work. And then I discovered a book by Mel Gordon on the Guignol. Mel Gordon lives in this area.
He does.
I believe.
He teaches at Berkeley, at UC Berkeley. Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw this book he'd written on Grand Guignol, and it came together. You know, this interest in horror culture, and realizing there was a theatre form that specialised in the screams and laughter of horror. So that's how I got into that. And then I started teaching it with my colleague Mike Wilson, and teaching our graduate undergrads and graduate students. And it just took off from there. And we did more and more work in it, and some performance work. And then realised there was enough to write a book on the subject. And now the second book's come out, so it's keeping us busy.
And so the second book is the one that includes The Better Half?
That's correct, yeah.
And a number of other...
Yes, 10 plays, yes. So 9 that were performed and 1 band play is included as well.
So I guess because of... is the Coward play in public domain now just because of its age, or do you have to get permission?
Yes, you have to get permission, yeah. Yeah. So we've had a good relationship with the Coward estate.
With Alan Brody?
Alan Brody, yeah. And they've been wonderfully supportive and really keen to see it finally in print. And, you know, we really appreciate that.
And Eddie, tell us about your interest in the area. You are certainly well known for your interest in film noir,
right.
and you've done presentations on it.
I have, in film festivals, and
written about
books
it.
On the subject and everything. And it's just interesting that, I mean, my background is very similar to Richard's, in that we shared interest in a lot of the same things. And I found, I mean, Russell Blackwood found me because of my interest in like mid-20th century American cinema styles and things. And I would go to the Thrill Peddlers and do like clip shows explaining to young actors today about the acting styles of that period when the Grand Guignol was thriving. Because I think it was necessary for them to see how actors played things back then so that they weren't afraid of being big and that you can still get, you know, believability across in style. And that was really my connection to begin with. And there is connections between noir and the horror thing, and it is more natural than it seems.
Pause. And Eddie, what's next in the... For you, after this?
I'm a multimedia kind of guy, I guess. I am working on a screenplay. I'm adapting a novel, not my own, someone else's novel, as a screenplay. And I have a film. It's interesting. I have a film that I've just finished that is actually in competition at the San Francisco International Film Festival that's coming up. A short film, dare I say, a one act. That I admit is very Grand Guignol. And I have to assume it's based on a short story that I wrote that's in a collection that just came out called A Hell of a Woman. That's kind of noir stories with female protagonists. And I really think that the work I'd been doing with the Thrill Peddlers had a great influence on my writing of this short story. And I realized when it was done that it is like a one-act play. But we did a film of it instead with Marcia Hunt, the venerable Hollywood actress who's now 90 years old, played the lead in it, and I had dinner with her the other night, and it turns out that she was friends with Louis Casson and,
wow.
and knew them both and knew Sybil Thorndike. And
wow.
it was pretty... I just mentioned that I was doing this play,
yeah.
and I was explaining the whole Grand Guignol Theater thing, and I mentioned them, and she's, oh, we were friends. I knew him well, you know? It's like, wow. When you get to be 90, it's like you can't get anything past somebody who's 90.
Well, I saw that it was an actor named Ian Fleming who was in the original production, but not the mystery writer, yeah. spy writer.
There's an interesting link there. There was a brief revival in 1928 in London, the Grand Guignol, and it only lasted a few weeks, unfortunately. But one young actor they had then was James Whale.
Ah.
And he was in a particularly gruesome play in which somebody is guillotined and they revive the head.
Oh.
And James Whale played the head. 3 years later, he makes Frankenstein. So I think that's a fascinating
That's amazing.
Reanimation, yeah.
Wow.
Well, now, Richard, had you been to San Francisco before?
No, it's my first time, and really enjoying myself.
Well, I was, when Eddie emailed me and told me that you were coming, I was, and that this is the American premiere, I was really knocked out. I think it's terrific.
It's fabulous, really. I'm just thrilled by the whole thing. And it's good, Richard, you're in the hands of a native now, so it's good.
That's
great. I'll show you all the places that aren't on the tour guide.
And you're also here for some other presentation?
I am, actually, yes, at the PCA convention, which is taking place here, Popular Culture Association, which is great. Yeah.
Well, tell us just a bit about that.
Yeah, well, it looks at a whole range of popular culture areas, and I'm actually here talking about radio. I'm talking about the 1940s show in Britain called Appointment with Fear, which was based on Suspense.
Mm.
One of the great radio noir,
I'm old enough to have listened to Suspense when I was growing up.
Wow.
Suspense.
Yeah.
And what they did was, as part of, it's an extraordinary story, really, as part of the war effort, some of the scripts from Suspense were sent over to the BBC. Under John Dixon Carr, the great crime writer, and he adapted them. I mean, he was such an Anglophile, he changed them very slightly for the English audience. But it became a cult success, presented by the Man in Black, who's Valentine Dial, whose father had played in the Grand Guignol in London. So there's all these kind of links there. So it's a bit of a sideline interest for me, but one I'm very passionate about as well. And it's not so far from the Grand Guignol, really.
No.
Now, do you teach more than about Grand Guignol in Wales?
Yes, I teach a whole range, mainly kind of theatre history, but I also do some practical teaching as well in the area of stage directing and a little bit of script writing now and then.
So you do some directing as well?
I do, yes.
So I can't wait for Richard to be sitting over my shoulder. interesting decision, that.
Well, it's just been great to have you both here, and I look forward to seeing the play.
We look forward to having you.
Yeah.
A true Coward fan in the audience will be good. And it's also great because it's nice we'll be bringing a younger crowd in, and wouldn't it be odd if this was someone's introduction to Coward would be through a play like this. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah,
and the Coward play is The Better Half, and it's part of a double bill with Christopher Holland's The Old Women or A Crime in a Madhouse at Thrill Peddlers Theater at the Hypnodrome, 575 10th Street between Bryant and Division, and it plays through the 3rd of May. I don't have the
Fridays, days. Fridays and Saturdays at this point. We'll see how we do. We may add a day, but at this point it's Fridays and Saturdays.
And for tickets, 1-800-838-3006. And we're talking with Eddie Muller, who's directing this production, and Professor Richard Hand from Glamorgan University in Wales, who uncovered the play, found it in the Lord Chamberlain's office, and has now published it. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Our pleasure, Alan. Thank you.